again, Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal. I have to disappoint you all by not being able to reflect on our weather here because I've been inside far too long and I have no clue what's going on in Vancouver outdoors at the moment. But I have the delight today of speaking with a colleague from Queensland, Georgia Cook, from the University of Queensland in their general practice group. Has a paper with her co-authors coming out in the December 2017 issue of Medical Education entitled Responses to Clinical Uncertainty in Australian GP Trainees, a Cross-Sectional Analysis. And we're going to jump right into that conversation. Georgia, you're in the middle of flu season in the GP clinic in Australia, and I understand it's been quite a torturous one this year, so thank you in particular for taking some time away and chatting with me.
Oh, my pleasure. It has been a big, big year.
Yeah, well, when flu season is making news around the world, I can only imagine how impactful it's been this year.
Absolutely, yeah.
And probably puts many of your trainees in a state of uncertainty, actually, as a very quick segue to your paper.
Yes, yes. Actually, it was my first year in general practice as a registrar when we had the swine flu outbreak. So there are some mirrors for me in reflecting on this, yes.
Yeah, no doubt. And you open your paper by saying that tolerance for ambiguity is essential for optimal learning and professional competence. And I imagine in some ways the dramatic outbreak you're dealing with reduces uncertainty. In some ways it increases it. But maybe I can just start by asking you to reflect on that opening sentence and tell our listeners a little bit about why you think tolerance for ambiguity is so important.
Oh, that's a big question, Kevin. I suppose for me, in starting out in clinical practice, it was one of the biggest things that I had to grapple with personally. Being in a room with a patient alone, even though my supervisor was just down the corridor, I think I felt the weight of making the right decision for everybody. But also at the same time, I acknowledged that it's really not possible to be certain of that all the time. So it's really essential because it's one of those things that you confront at the beginning of your career, but also forevermore. It's not a fact that you can learn and store away and call upon when required. It's a skill that you practice right from the beginning, the first day as an intern through to your last day as a consultant.
And in the Australian training system, is there much acknowledgement of that? Does the notion of uncertainty become a focal point for your training at various points in time?
Oh, absolutely. In general practice training, it's one of the key points that registrars are exposed to right from their sort of orientation workshops that they have. So you'll see one of my co-authors has a particular interest in that area, Simon Morgan, and he's written a number of papers on starting out in general practice and how to manage uncertainty. So I think it's something that is there. It's probably more implicit than explicit, but it drives a lot of conversations between, you know, new registrars and supervisors. In our textbook for general practice that we tend to carry around with us as Australian GPs, Murtagh's book, it's really front and centre, that sort of diagnostic model, and using that cognitive model to manage uncertainty as well as some of the biases that we bring along with us into a consultation.
Right. Well, and I've heard a number of people make comments on how important it is to, you know, learn to become comfortable with uncertainty in the way that you're describing. One of the reasons that I wanted to take the time to talk with you about this paper is you've used something called the Registrar Clinical Encounters and Training Project. And more specifically, I guess we want to talk about the scales that you use to try to measure uncertainty, because it feels to me as though you're making an effort with this project and the particular measurement to tease apart different dimensions of uncertainty rather than the way I typically hear talked about is just some overarching sense of not having full confidence that one knows what's going on.
Yeah. So I suppose the scale that we've used in this paper, the Physician Responses Reactions to Uncertainties, was published back in the 90s by Martha Geraghty. And I suppose what attracted me to this scale was that it was multidimensional. So it is looking at the physician's responses in the sense in it's sort of more of an effective response. How do they feel about uncertainty, as well as how they feel about sharing that with their patients? So the weight that they carry around the uncertainty, their concern for their patients, and then their concern how they discuss that with people. So I think that's interesting to consider, because some people might feel quite comfortable with one element of that, but quite uncomfortable about some of the other elements. Yeah.
And what was it that you felt needed to be better understood, given that this scale has been around for a while and people have been talking about uncertainty for some time? What's the gap in the literature that you hope to fill with this project?
Yeah, well, I think when you go and you look at the literature, there's a lot of commentary about the importance of uncertainty. There are a number of really pithy editorials that talk about it, but as far as research goes, it's rather thin. So this project here, we wanted to begin to describe it in sort of an epidemiological sense. Now, right from the beginning, if you were describing a disease, what would be the first thing that you would think about? How common is it? How big is the problem? What goes along with it? So this paper is our attempt to begin to unpack it, really, and to help us to understand what research questions we should really be developing from here. So we wanted to know, is this a problem across the cohort? Does it appear to change with seniority in training? Is it that female trainees are more anxious due to uncertainty than their male colleagues? Or are there other cofactors that are in there that are very important? So we examined a pretty broad suite of potential factors there, and really we're looking for clusters of those.
Yeah, well, and particularly interesting to me anyway in the data that you report on is that many of those factors you just named are associated with degree of uncertainty that people express, but it's not, again, just uncertainty overall. There seem to be different factors that relate to different aspects of uncertainty, and I wonder if I can ask you to highlight some of the relationships that you found most interesting.
Yeah, there were two real clusters when we looked at the results we had. So if you were to look at more of those effective responses for the clinician, how anxious is the clinician due to uncertainty? How concerned are they about their bad outcomes for their patients? There are a few associations there. So it's more likely that those trainees were female, that they were non-Australian trained, that they'd not worked at the practice they were currently in a previous term, and also that they'd had fewer years of hospital-based practice before starting in general practice. So that was sort of one group of associations. Then when it came to looking at reluctance to have conversations about uncertainty with patients, we saw quite a different pattern. In that group, it was more likely that you were to be Australian trained, that you're in a large city or a larger regional area, and that you're practicing in a location that had higher socioeconomic status. But the interesting one, though, was that you were more likely to have health qualifications prior to beginning your medical degree, which really did surprise me. I expected the relationship might be the other way around. So those were the two broad clusters that emerged in our results.
Are there overarching explanations that help you make sense of those clusters? In the latter one in particular, again, I'm only speculating post hoc, but it sounds as though people might become more hesitant to disclose if they feel like they should be more of the expert on that topic as opposed to somebody who might come with less formal training, therefore maybe being a bit more readily able to acknowledge when they don't have full certainty.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it might also be an interesting dynamic that's occurring between your assumptions as a clinician and your assumptions about your patients. So when you put together that sort of factor around, I'm the expert, I've got a physiotherapy degree, I've practiced for 3 years as a physiotherapist before starting, I should be really across this, I should be comfortable with having these discussions. And then if you're practicing in an area where you feel your patients might have higher expectations around healthcare and higher health literacy, you might expect that that made the conversation easier, but it seems perhaps it might put up a barrier between the GP registrar and the patient. Just, yes, I'm the expert. How do I begin to explain that medicine is not certain? Mm-hmm. There are some things written about how to manage that, but typically that comfort, I think, comes with time. So I remember being a GP registrar and thinking, I really need to look this up in the consultation, and feeling comfortable going onto an online guide in front of a patient is something that I don't think you're very used to as a junior doctor in the hospital. You've got time to step away and do that reading, whereas that luxury isn't afforded to you in a general practice consultation. So that might be part of the particular challenge of general practice in this area.
Mm. Well, it's just a little bit of a thin edge, doesn't it, in that we prioritize and think that our practitioners need to have a confidence, they need to have a feeling of a certain degree of expertise in order to act effectively. But at the same time, if that becomes too embedded, it can be difficult to engage in a way that accepts and acknowledges and takes advantage of whatever certainty might be lacking.
It also makes me think of the strategies that we often don't explicitly talk about that can be helpful in managing these situations in real time. You know, one of my favourite ways of creating a bit of space in a consultation is to listen to the heart sounds for a little bit longer than I perhaps need to from a clinical perspective, just to get a bit of space to reflect. I mean, I think other people have spoken about using the time that you wash your hands to pause and think. So it doesn't have to be that you're talking all the time. That pressure to interact all the time isn't necessarily there in a consultation, and taking small moments to pause and prepare for the next phase, I think, can be quite helpful in both managing your own effective response to uncertainty and also in preparing for how to talk about that with a patient.
Right, very interesting interventions, and leads me to wonder, given that you did see different phenotypes, so to speak, of trainees, do you have any thoughts this early stage of exploration as to how to best determine or try to identify the particular struggle that any individual trainee might have and what interventions could be appropriate as a result?
I suppose what I hope comes out of this paper is a structure for how to talk about developing confidence in these areas in managing uncertainty. So I would hate to see for, you know, these phenotypes that we've been able to identify just being applied, and you'll have a class for female Australian trainees who've not been in the practice before. How do you manage uncertainty? Right. It's more that it's a way in to say, you know, we're all individuals, but there are some things that are more common in different groups of trainees, as a way of unlocking those conversations that individuals can have with their supervisors or the medical educators can talk about this as being normal, that clinicians struggle with this and it's not something that we are supposed to be expert at from day one. But also that we see a big flicker of hope in the paper that as you progress through training, it appears that your tolerance for uncertainty does improve quite quickly with time. So the size of that effect, though this is a cross-sectional study, gives registrars a hopeful outcome in that, you know, quickly you will start to feel much more confident in approaching, you know, difficult and uncertain consultations with your patients. And sitting with that discomfort is part of how you learn to deal with it.
Yeah, and hopeful notes are always a good note to end on, I think. So given that, and given the fact that there's more to come, I think we probably should just wrap up there. And I'll just say that I look forward to hearing more as you continue this epidemiological approach.
Yeah, it's been a very rewarding project so far.
Very good. Just before signing off, I'll remind our listeners that I've been speaking with Georgia Cook from University of Queensland about a paper called Responses to Clinical Uncertainty in Australian GP Trainees, a Cross-Sectional Analysis. Thanks once again, Georgia. I hope that clinic settles down for you fairly soon.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.